Hey guys, it's Ryan here from London, UK, via New Zealand, and this episode of IVMV is brought to you by Patreon supporters like me. So roll the intro music, Corey, and more importantly, go cut these.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. This is our 352nd episode and the last episode of the Cubs 2015 regular season. On this episode, we're going to recap the season by looking at some of the big picture reasons that the Cubs were so successful this season. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I'm joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hey, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Before we get started here, we have some, I'm going to share at the end of the episode all the details, but basically this starts a long run of IVMV episodes. Tonight's episode, we have some bonus episodes coming this week, and like I said, I'll share all the details at the end of the episode. And then also, if you're listening to this on Monday morning, we will be sharing on Facebook and Twitter the image for all of the game watches that came in. That are around the country. And Kurt, you've had no problem, no difficulties with that image. Is that right?
Yeah, none at all. Just that Corey wants to put them in like a 50 by 50 pixel space and then send it out to all of you. So any of you that are over the age of 26 can't read it.
Kurt doesn't.
Just kidding.
You know, you can pinch and zoom on an iPhone. Or I'm assuming an Android phone. I'm not sure, but.
They haven't built that into the Androids yet.
But a lot of game watches came in. What? Didn't we end up with like 24 or 25, I think?
Yeah, there's a lot. There are a lot. So, yeah, we'll get them. I will fit them all in some sort of image at some point. There'll be a couple different sizes. So if you can't read it on Twitter, go to, you know, Facebook, and we'll get the information to you somehow.
Yeah, all over the country, actually all over the world. Definitely, if you're listening to this, look at our Twitter feed, look at our Facebook page. We're at IVMV on Twitter, and you can get to our Facebook page by going to facebook.com/IVMV. And, you can find out if there's any Cubs fans, getting together to watch the wild card game on Wednesday night, near you, and you can join them. So, like I said, we're going to look at the big picture stuff on this episode, the reasons that the Cubs were so successful this year. And, I kind of feel like we'll have all season to look at individual performances. And I also think that I'm curious what you guys think. I feel it's really important to kind of separate the regular season from the postseason. We talked on this last episode about how even with a wild card loss, this 2015 regular season has been – you know, obviously a success, but I think like tonight is the perfect time to just look back at that. And then, cause I think if we kind of like sum up the 2015 season in, let's say a week or in 6 weeks, I think like our opinions of what this 2015 season was could be kind of either tarnished or enhanced by what happens from here on out.
Yeah. There could be intense exhilaration or intense pain. Either way, it's going to skew our opinion of the regular season. So I think you're totally right.
Yeah. So I feel like this episode right here, it's kind of a chance for us to just take a deep breath, momentarily forget about what's sitting in front of us, and just enjoy the regular season that wrapped up today. And man, I unfortunately was not able to watch today's game. I was able to listen to most of it. But what an exciting year. I mean, let's just start off with the fact 97 wins. 97.
Yeah, that's insane. I have a feeling. So I have a feeling it's going to be impossible to get through to tonight's episode without sharing any scary stat I may have come up with. But yeah, 97. It's the ninth best in team history. You know, this is the same record as the 08 team.
Right. Which
I think that's just Anybody who predicted that at the beginning of the season, we would have called crazy.
Well, I think you had to be crazy. I mean, honestly, mm-hmm. if you would have guessed 97 wins, like, you're off your rocker.
Yeah. It's amazing to think that, they pulled it off. They finished strong. I mean, they put themselves in an opportunity to take the home field advantage. I mean, to finish the season winning 8 straight, granted they're playing some bad teams, but, you know, they're not letting up. They didn't take their foot off the pedal. And
how about this?
Amazing.
How about the starting pitching in like the last week? Just crazy. I don't have any of the stats in front of me, but I know they were damn good.
And then sort of like you keep, you know, putting yourself back to the way you thought before this season. And we're all so excited about Lester. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to put Lester down and how he performed. Like, I think he performed okay. But then to think that, like, we're excited about, obviously, Arrieta, who isn't. But then, you know, Hendricks coming through with a couple of incredible starts in the last two go into the postseason.
Yeah. Okay, so let's dive into this. Why was this 2015 season so successful for the Cubs? I'll let you go first, Andy.
Oh, all right. Remixing it again. I like it.
Well, it's just been me and Kurt talking, so I figured we'd give you an opportunity to chime in.
I thought we could take a look at Joe Maddon's impact on the club. And I wanted to talk about Pythagorean record a little bit, which is using run differential to project win-loss record. And it is based on the idea that run differential gives a more accurate picture of a team's ability than their actual win-loss record. And it's especially effective when you have smaller sample sizes. So in the course of a full season, the actual win-loss record of a team should kind of match up to the Pythagorean record for the most part. But the Cubs' Pythagorean record was 89-72. And so you compare that to the actual record of 96-65. 97-65. Sorry, I don't mean to shortchange the Cubs. so they won 8 more games than Pythagorean record predicted that they would win. So you got to wonder then, you know, is how much of an impact does Maddon have, you know, for those extra wins? I found that this John Shepard study where he compared projected wins for a team using Pecota, Zips, et cetera, to the actual wins that a team had in a year. And he found that a good manager typically added 5 to 6 wins in a season. And in fact, when he was with the Rays in 2008, Maddon won. I guess the team won 8 wins more than they were projected to win. And so, I think that you can say that, you know, Maddon definitely had an impact on this team and helped them sort of overachieve a little bit. Just how much he kept the team playing loose, kept it lighthearted with even a fun atmosphere with celebrating the wins, the theme trips, having a beach day for freaking stroke, you know, stuff like that. I think that did have an impact on this team being able to, you know, achieve their potential this season. The Cubs had 13 walk-off wins. And I think Joe Maddon's approach of not just grinding out batting practice and stuff all the time definitely contributed to the Cubs winning those close games, having those comeback wins, and achieving above what their run differential suggested that they should have done.
Yeah, I find it kind of amazing that I totally believable, but also amazing that the manager could be responsible for like 5-6 wins. You know, like, can you, there needs to be like a manager war stat.
Well, no, because
a 5 win player, you know, that's like Rizzo, you know, or 6 right. win player. That's, you know, Rizzo. And then here's a guy, a manager's making like just jump change compared to the players. And to see him have this big of an impact, it's kind of incredible.
Well, and you're right. It's so hard to. There's obviously the on the field things that you can point to, maybe in how he's managed the bullpen, how he's used substitutions, all that kind of stuff. Like, you can maybe point to like you know, like those are reasons that the Cubs were more successful this year and everything. But you're right. You bring up those like clubhouse things, and how can you, you know, there's no way to measure that. There's no like, there's no like pajama party stat on FanGraphs that I know of.
That was worth one win at least. I mean, yeah, Arrieta's mustache onesie. That's a win right there.
Well, and even like Shepard's study, you know, it doesn't take into account, you know, a star player getting injured, stuff like that. So it's not, it is really hard to quantify the actual effect that a manager has on a team.
Yeah. But really, I mean, doesn't it just feel like he was like the timing on this whole thing, the timing of like these young kids coming up this year, Joe Maddon, like being available in a fluke this year, the Cubs managing to lure him away from Tampa. I mean, this thing just came. It was like the perfect storm. And he is the, like, I can't think of any other manager that would be better for this team than Joe Maddon right now. I mean, it just seems like he's perfect for them.
Dale Swain, maybe.
Well, let me say this on the broadcast today. Len said that you can't just say, I guess you can't ignore Dale Swain and Ricky Renteria. Like, he was trying to make a case that all this didn't happen in this season, that those guys had to have had their little part to play in how well the Cubs have done this season. Do you guys agree with that?
I don't know.
I would say somewhat. I mean, they're sort of like martyrs to the cause, but
I'm not going to give Ricky Renteria credit for Chris Bryant, you know.
But at the same time, like, you look at, I mean, Dale Swaim is like the absolute contrast to Maddon. He's the almost the polar opposite. I wonder if part of that, I mean, Maddon coming available was probably the biggest reason they went after him. But at the same time, they had to look at Maddon and think, oh, wow, this is an absolute perfect fit. Look how Swaim didn't work out with these young guys. And now you bring in this guy who's like, you know, all about the fun.
Well, I mean, you know, I would imagine that when Theo and Jed were putting this thing together 2 or 3 years ago, I think that they probably had Joe Maddon in their sights back then. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they knew, because what, didn't Maddon's contract with the Rays, wasn't it up like this year or maybe next year? You know, they had to be thinking about that, and that's why they obviously pushed so hard to
it was like an early Christmas present for them.
Right. I mean, man, it's kind of weird to think about what this team, this 2015 team, would have been like under Ricky Renteria. It's like, I just can't even picture him managing this team.
Well, and if Madden's worth 5 or 6 wins, they're still a 90, you know, 91 team win team. So,
yeah, although Ricky could have been a negative contributor. I mean, maybe.
Right. I think all of us would still be flipping out over 88 wins, 87 wins. You know, we'd still be having the same conversation.
Thad in the chat makes a great point, is that we should give some love to Chris Bosio too, because the pitching staff did a great job this season overall.
Yeah.
Yep. I think, you could probably say that about the entire coaching staff, really.
Well, especially, I think, go ahead, Kurt.
Especially Gary Jones.
Malley, I don't know if he's responsible for what happened with Castro, but, you know, something changed when he got benched and came back offensively and hit the ball well.
I think you can just credit Bosio for so much of just what this pitching staff has done over the last 3 years. You know, I mean, look at Arrieta just didn't turn into what he was this year. Bosio was working with him, and someone in the organization had to be the one that identified that Arrieta could be turned around. Maybe it's Bosio. I don't know. I mean, but he's done a lot.
I'd be interested to hear some of the players talk about what they think the impact of Renteria was, or, you know, on the current team, if anything.
Yeah, if you could get them off the record, that would be interesting to hear what their thoughts. Yeah. Because it'd be so politically correct to actually answer.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right.
You could even go, I mean, what I've been so impressed with, like, is and you never give credit to this kind of thing, but like the Cubs is probably the best scouting team. I think this current scouting staff is probably the best you've ever seen in baseball, because you look at all of these things, the reclamation pitching, the rookies, the turnarounds, all this stuff. And that all comes from scouting. Like they keep, you know, winning big bets. And it's kind of, at this point, you have to say it's not luck anymore. Like, this is really incredible scouting. And it's so easy to give credit to the people who are there now, but like, you know, who's the guy watching some 18-year-old in, you know, wherever? It's kind of incredible.
Yeah. Anything else you guys wanted to say about Madden or coaching or anything before we move on?
They good.
Well, the one thing that's kind of stood out, you know, I kind of sat back and thought, okay, what was it about this 2015 team? And I think a big part of it is the second half of the season. I mean, they were just so incredible the second half. And really, you would kind of think that that would be maybe when this team might fall off a little bit, given their youth, the fact that some of them hadn't even played this many games in a season before, all that type of stuff. And then look at how they finished the season. Like you said earlier, Kurt, granted they were playing some weaker competition here in the last six games, but they still played, you know, they finished strong. And obviously, you know, Jake Arrieta's production and performance in the second half of the season was historic. But at the All-Star break, the Cubs were 47-40, seven games over 500, which felt pretty good at that point. I think we were all pretty happy. They were in possession of the second wild card spot at that point, but I think by a single game. And then in August, they went 19-9. They had winning streaks of nine games and six games. They went 19-9 in September, and they went 4-0 in October. So since August 1st, but they went 42-18, I believe. So 24 games over 500. I think I'm looking at my notes here. I think that's what I meant.
It's something crazy good like that.
Yeah. It doesn't really make sense what I wrote down, so I'm just going to decipher it and say, I think that's what I was getting at. But, you know, things just at a time when we kind of, when you might expect to see a young team kind of fade away, kind of get tired, and kind of fade back a little bit, it almost seems like that's when this team, that's when things really started clicking with this team. And they picked up a ton of steam here in the last few months. And I think it's because of how they played those roughly 60 games. If I'm any other team right now in the postseason, I think the idea of facing the Cubs is pretty scary. And this isn't like they just got hot in the last few weeks against teams like the Reds and the Brewers, you know, teams that are bad this season. They played a lot of really good teams in that stretch. They played the Cardinals and the Pirates a lot. And those are the teams with the two best records in baseball. Mm-hmm. So I just it's really pretty incredible. I mean, I think the second half of the season, when you think about the second half of this Cubs season, I think you're going to think about Jake Arrieta. But just as a team overall, they played fantastic.
Yeah, it was a pretty surreal second half, that's for sure. Just to, you know, see them kick it in high gear, and you know, it was like you got to the point where you just sort of, you sit down to watch a game and you're like, yeah, you expect them to win, and then you lose and you're like, oh well, you know, that kind of sucks, but they'll come back tomorrow and get another win. It's just like you never felt that oh crap feeling,
right? Which
in the second half.
Yeah, and the fact that they did bounce back from losses so quickly, you know, if they can get past this wild card game, that kind of makes me like feel like they're not going to necessarily let a playoff loss sink them. Like it almost feels like this is the kind of team that could go down 3-1 or 2-0 and fight their way back. Like it just kind of seems like that's what they've done. They'll lose 3 in a row and then they'll win 8 in a row. That's what they do.
I think that's what makes the one game wild card so scary, even though you have nothing but confidence in Arrieta at this point. But, you know, even the best pitcher in baseball can have, well, I'll stop. Never mind. We're just going to go.
Even the best pitcher in baseball can have another spectacular no-hit outing.
Before I stop myself.
And he has a lot of confidence in himself as he talked trash to on Twitter to somebody this evening.
That was amazing.
Actually, he kind of fired back at trash talking.
So, Kurt, what do you think? What do you credit the success of this 2015 Cubs to?
Well, I think it would be a mistake to discount the incredible impact that the rookies had. I think we could start with Chris Bryant. You know, guy comes in with all the hype in the world and everybody loves him. And then to go out and put up this kind of season that he did is really, you know, at the beginning of the season, we talked about, you know, the kind of zips and steamers and Pecota rankings. And a lot of guys who do that stuff came out and talked about how this is crazy for a rookie. Like, you know, we just don't see these kind of numbers. And in most statistical measures, he surpassed all of his projections. And it's kind of hard to sum up how good his rookie season was. I think it's pretty safe to assume he's the rookie of the year. I think it'd be crazy if he wasn't. You know, finishing, he hit 274. Rizzo just overtook him at the end to lead the team in batting average. So slash line 274, 365, 487, with 26 home runs and 99 RBI. It's just offensively, you know, you could just go on and on about how great he was. You know, and defensively, he did what you expected him to do. He wasn't perfect, but pretty good at third. And then also mixed around some other positions. So it was just kind of like an incredible rookie season by him.
No Randall Grichuk, though.
No. You know, if Piscotty, you know, maybe he should get it. But yeah, it's kind of hard to put in words like how good it was, because, like, you know, as a whole, you look at Major League history, that's not like a blow you away season, but for a rookie to come in and do that after missing the first handful of games, it is pretty incredible. So obviously Chris Bryant, rookie of the year, so give him some props. But then you move on to Addison Russell, started a little slow, which I think is to be expected when you come up to the majors. But then in the second half, really found his stride. In the second half, he hit 259. I think his season total was somewhere in the 240s. But then he hit 8 of his 13 home runs in the second half. And then I think the most spectacular thing about him is his defense. I mean, he had some game-saving defensive plays. Just his range is incredible. His poise is amazing. So, you know, it's tough to see him startle and have to go through getting bumped. But the reality is that Addison is the better shortstop, and that's what had to happen. And he had an amazing season, both offensively and defensively, and kind of got a little overshadowed by, you know, even Bryant, but still had a pretty great offensive year. And then Schwarber, of course, he kind of faded towards the end, which is okay, because the time he came up, the offense was really struggling,
right?
And he provided that much-needed left-handed power. And just took off running, hit a ton of home runs early. You know, the Schwarber game was amazing to watch. And then he ended up with 15 homers in just 63 games, which is pretty hard to fathom. So, he was incredible. And then Soler, who is not, I guess, you know, maybe isn't in his first year. We saw him last year, but he still had his rookie status. Had a tough injury in August, but ended up being a pretty good offensive contributor. Hitting 262 and 10 home runs and 47 RBI. So as a whole, I think it's safe to say that this offensive, or this rookie class, is probably one of the best seen on any one team for a very long time.
Yeah, and I mean, really had the potential to be, I mean, if you want to, well, Javier Baez, I guess, wouldn't. He was technically a rookie last year, but
he didn't have, he had lost his rookie status. But
if you look at just the young, like, right, if you look at that young crop of players, and just how much potential is there, and that it was so, you know, I think a lot of people were scared to put a lot of, like, to kind of put their emotions into these prospects, because, you know, you hear over and over that prospects don't work out, and especially Cubs prospects and everything. So it's like, what a great season to kind of like just put all that stuff behind us, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not to say that none of them, you know, any of them could encounter some troubles, and they're going to have to adjust to pitching when pitching adjusts to them and everything. Mm-hmm. But man, what a, they definitely came in and, performed well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so let's kind of stay on the, offense. You know, obviously not to dismiss the pitching and defense, but, like Kurt, like you said, I mean, this was a very offensive team, and with, lots of young power bats and everything. I was thinking maybe we could kind of break down some of the aspects of the offense, that again, like contributed to this successful season. I'll get us started with how disciplined this team was at the plate. The Cubs tied, they led the National League. Actually, I didn't look today at the end of the game today, but as of before today, before game 162, they led the National League in walks this season. They also led all of baseball in pitches per plate appearance. And I think it's especially notable because this is such a young team with so many rookies. The patience is something that's clearly been stressed at all levels of the organization. And I think the players that we see coming up, even, you know, past this season, are going to have plate approaches like that. And I think it's kind of clear. If you look at the players on the Cubs roster, you can tell who Theo and Jed drafted and who they didn't, because of the approach at the plate is something that I think they had in mind when they were drafting. That's why players like Castro and Baez kind of stand out, although both have improved quite a bit with plate discipline. I don't really have anything to back that up, but it feels like Castro has gotten more selective and is really kind of sitting and waiting on, you know, waiting for pitches that he can drive. Baez's approach has definitely improved. It's been a small sample size, and not only has it been a small sample size, but Madden's been able to use him selectively in matchups. And so that's obviously really helped Baez. But his strikeout rate was 41.5% last season, and it's down to under 30% now. And I've really enjoyed watching Baez since he got called up. He's batting just under 300 and just been solid. It's also nice that there's not a lot of pressure on him. Look at when he got called up, you know, there in Denver last year. I mean, there was so much hype around him and everything. And now he doesn't have to be the guy. But, yeah, the Cubs are taking a lot of walks. They're taking a lot of pitches, driving up the pitch count on opposing pitchers. And we've been talking about that all season. It's allowed them to chase starters out early and to get into the bullpens. And I think it becomes tougher to do that in the playoffs because the teams in the playoffs typically have pretty good bullpens too. So I think I was trying to think of like how obviously it can help you in a game. But I was thinking too that if they can get into the 5-7 game series, that will put strain on a team because it could have an impact if you force the starting pitchers to throw way more pitches than they'd like to, or maybe than they had in the regular season. That could impact it. That could be an impact at the end of a series, or if you've really put a strain on the other team's bullpen by making them throw a lot of pitches. So, I don't know that again, though, that's just something that really, if you would have told me before the end of the season, especially with what we saw from Javier Baez last year, you know, you'd think, okay, so you got a team with however, you know, what, this many rookies. Oh, yeah, they're going to lead the majors in pitches per plate appearance. I wouldn't have believed it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it kind of offset the strikeout rate a bit. It kind of, I mean, we talked about strikeout rate a lot earlier before the season and probably during the season too, but they still led the league in strikeouts, but you can kind of see how a patient approach can offset that a little bit. You know, if you're not patient, you're just striking out on 3-4 pitches. You're not doing a whole lot of good, but you know, they struck out over 1500 times, which is funny to say, but then they still produced. And I think that comes from the patient approach. I mean, you see 7-8 pitches and strikeout, that's a much better plate appearance, right, than 3 or 4.
Yes.
Well, and then going forward in the game, that informs your future at bats. You see more of what a pitcher has to offer.
Right.
And I think that definitely did affect. I mean, we talked about in the fifth inning, the Cubs' insane batting average, you know, so I think some of that comes from seeing all those pitches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys have for offense? Anything stand out to you guys?
I was just going to say, I love the fact that the Cubs had 9 players with double-digit home runs.
Yeah.
From the top with Rizzo with 31, Bryant with 26, down to Soler with 10. 9 players with double-digit home runs. I think that's the most in franchise history, if I'm not mistaken. Or, I'm sorry, the first time in franchise history they've had 9 players with double-digit homers. They've had 8 multiple times before. But it's weird, though, because you look at the way the league, you know, the entire league pans out, and the Cubs are only 7th in the second half in homers. They rank 7th in the entire league. And I kind of would have guessed that they would rank closer to the top. The Blue Jays are number 1 in the league, and they only have 7 double-digit home run hitters. So the Cubs are really kind of spreading out their power hitting among more players, it seems like, than some of the other teams. And so that's cool to see. I mean, like, just about anybody top to bottom in the lineup can go deep at any time. I thought it was kind of funny. I looked at Steamer projections and I projected Javier Baez as having 22 homers this season.
He had one, didn't he?
Yeah, just one. But obviously that was taking into account him playing most of the season.
Right, yeah.
But anyway, it's pretty cool that they've been doing a lot via power hitting, but it's not just, you know, 1 or 2, 3 guys shouldering that load.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, to face this lineup top to bottom, you know, it was kind of amazing to see. Like, you didn't feel like, oh, we have to really turn this order around and get back to the top so we can see guys come up. You sort of felt comfortable no matter where they were in the inning or in the order to score some runs, which is kind of cool to watch this year. But, I mean, my offensive highlight, I guess, and you guys kind of took the best ones, but their vast improvement in on-base percentage this year. They improved 21 points over last year. Last year they were around 300. This year 321, which, you know, the Blue Jays were the leader in that category at 340. So the Cubs are 12th in baseball, but, you know, these numbers don't vary a ton. You know, you're looking at the Royals at 11th at 322 and then 323, 23, 4, 24. So, you know, to hover right in the pack somewhere between the 5th and the 10th team and on base percentage, that really sort of like magnifies the power you guys talked about earlier. You know, you're not hitting solo home runs anymore. The Cubs are scoring more in bunches. And I think we saw that a lot where they'd have huge innings, 5, 6, 7 run innings a lot. So yeah, it was kind of nice to see
How fun would those types of innings be in the playoffs? How fun would that be Wednesday night?
Giant stress reliever.
Oh, man.
That. It's like, I that would be incredible. You know, you're just on edge and all of a sudden you rack up 5 runs.
Are you guys getting, like, I'm getting really, like, my stomach hurts about Wednesday.
I haven't hit the stomach hurting yet, but.
Oh, it kind of comes and goes, but I'm kind of like, well, my palms are sweaty right now. I'm thinking about Wednesday and I'm starting to like sweat.
Yeah.
Which is why I cannot go anywhere in public to watch that game on Wednesday. I can't do it. I'm all for it. I think it's awesome that people are getting together for those game watches, and I'll tell you, in a series, I'm there. But in one game, I'm pacing. I'm probably yelling. Which makes my dog really nervous. My dog does not like me watching Notre Dame football games. And I think a Cubs wild card game and the playoff games are going to have me wound pretty tight. But
yeah, I'm the same way. I'll be at home.
Yeah. I don't know why I felt the need to. I think because I started getting like shaky about Wednesday. we mentioned Wednesday and I got all like, yeah, we mentioned Wednesday and I got all nervous.
Well, for me, it's worth getting nervous in a group setting, because then when the Cubs win, I get to celebrate with other people. Like I think it's going to be fun, you know, if you're at your house still and you see them win, of course. But I mean, around a bunch of other people celebrating.
I know. I'm not.
And I would hate to miss that too. But like, you know, we joke. I'm kind of like the crotchety old man of the group. But like, if I can't hear it or if I miss something, like I'm just like
down in front.
I have to have control. If I can't control the volume of the TV, you know, all that stuff.
You're like, go to a bar and like that. You make them give you the remote.
if there's a bar that could do that and give me a seat and a remote, I'd be all in for that. But otherwise.
It's like up on a throne.
Yeah, old guy needs the remote. You know, because like
you just point to people and the bouncers kick them out.
There's two people in that bar that aren't watching the game and like talking. I'm gonna be pissed. I don't want anything to do with that.
Get him out of here.
These two gone.
See, and that's where I kind of feel like if I'm gonna watch it in a group, I'm going to Duffy's most likely. And Duffy's isn't really like, you know how like there's, if you go to some sports bar, there's just those idiots that won't shut up. You know, they're just like, you know, like mid-20s sports guy. You know, like, no, Bruce. For instance, well, Andy and I sat behind one of those guys at the Illinois-Nebraska football game yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
He felt the need to inform everyone around him that a field goal counted for 3 points.
he was dropping such illuminating nuggets as you need 1 foot down inbounds in the college football for it to count as a reception.
Oh, he was full of them. But
you're right. There's going to be a bunch of people that are going to talk like they're experts on the Cubs, and they probably didn't start paying attention until late August.
Right. Yeah. Or just I don't know. I mean, more, that's fine that some people are going to be like that. I just don't like want to be around, you know. I think somebody mentioned, I think Chris was being, he said B-Dubs never has that issue. It's like the people that I imagine being at Buffalo Wild Wings are the people I do not. And I mean, you know, I've actually gone to Buffalo Wild Wings a couple times, but if you go to Duffy's, I don't think you get as many like people second guessing what's happening. I don't think you get people as being like as critical because of the clientele. And so it's like a bunch of Kurtz in a room. Yes.
Old drunk guys.
So I'm kind of like, I don't know. That's kind of where I would want to.
No, if we could have like, you could have a little private setting with people I know and like, I'm good. But
yeah.
Well, anyway, Beth and I have childcare that night, so we have to decide where we're going to go. I think we're going to try to go.
You
somewhere.
Are going in so, public.
Yes.
I'll touch base with you, Andy.
What if they don't have the sound on the
Then we go somewhere else. We're not going to go somewhere where there's no sound.
You
spend the whole night driving around
with sound, and then you end up at home at the fourth inning, and you're like, man, we should have been like Kurt and stayed home.
No, I'm going to research this crap. You think I'm flying blind here?
You need to call ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys are going to be like, just, are you going to have the volume on for the Cubs game?
Meanwhile, Kurt's at home, remote in hand.
Right.
Annoying the neighbors because they got it so loud.
Excuse me, are you going to have the sound on for the Cubs game on Wednesday?
Could you turn the volume up?
That time I was here, you did not have the sound on.
I was told I could listen to the sound at a reasonable volume on Wednesday night.
You're gonna be in like a bar and be like, everybody be quiet.
Go put your cover sheets on your TPS reports.
You're in trouble, Andy.
I don't know. I'll touch base with the Andy. Like I may be interested in going to watch it somewhere. I just can't decide.
Don't do it.
I know. I feel I feel like I need to be home, but I don't know. This is just it, man. Just this decision is making me nervous. I can't handle this. I'm going to be a wreck this week. Oh, man. All right. Well, anything else you guys want to say about this season before we move on to listener questions?
Let's move on.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So if you shop
I do want to say before you go, if you shop, I want to say that one thing I forgot to mention with the homer stuff is Dexter Fowler had 17 homers, which I think is four more than he has ever hit in his career.
Yeah. Yep.
And he played in Denver.
Yeah.
So that guy found something in his stroke there.
Although it kind of took away from his batting average, but we're going to actually talk about Dexter here in a little bit.
He has basket power.
All right. So yeah, if you shop on Amazon, don't forget to go through ivmv.com, click on the Amazon link on the side of our website. Doesn't cost you anything extra. And Amazon gives us a percentage of your purchase. It gives us your purchase. What you order is sent to us.
You order a mattress through Amazon. It's coming here.
All right. So we got some listener questions here. Hopefully none slipped through. They kind of came in throughout the last 4 or 5 days. So if we don't read yours, that means I missed it, and I apologize. So this first one comes from Anthony Hutfliss, one of our associate producers. And he says, can Starlin win comeback player of the year or maybe comeback player of the last 2 months?
I don't know what qualifies you. I don't know what the,
well, I what think the
qualifications
next,
are for that. But, yeah. Yes, last 2 months, absolutely.
Right, right. This should be a new... What a weird season for Castro. Just weird. Yeah. I was looking at this. So in April, he hit .325. Lots of singles, though. In that month, he hit 2 home runs and 1 double. And Castro historically hits a lot of doubles. And then so after hitting .325 in April, he hit .221 in May. He hit .170 in July. His slash line in July was .170, .194, .202. Just brutal. And I believe the low point for his batting average this season was .233. And this is coming from a guy that has said that he sees himself as a .300 hitter. So .233 is obviously not where he wants to be. So then the benching happens and Madden was able to put him in some good situations with matchups and everything. And what a rebound. So, he batted .296 in August and then his slash line in September was .426. .452, .750. And now his batting average is up to .267, up from .233. So, you know, .267, still a bad season overall for Castro, but he has definitely contributed to this team here in the last few months. And I think it obviously just benefits the Cubs. Because I think that it's probably given them some insight as to, I mean, this is kind of an aspect of Castro that we never saw. I mean, who would have known that this is, in watching him the first half of the season, who would have known that he would do this in the last couple months? So maybe it's allowed the Cubs to kind of reconsider where they might, you know, what they might see his role being with this team. And if they still, you know, if they feel that he is not part of the future of this team, he has definitely increased his value. I mean, it's I think his value is still taking a hit because of this season, but at least there's something for them to point to say, no, he's, you know, little bargaining power, I guess, just from what he's done.
Yeah, it certainly made me more and more fond of him. I've always liked Castro and we've always been supporters, I think, as a whole. But yeah, and now it's kind of like if he were to get dealt, it would kind of feel like, oh, that kind of sucks. But it's kind of cool, like, to see him play that new role and do it well. I hope that maybe it works out kind of in the current scenario where he moves over to second.
Yeah. This next one is from Stuart in St. Louis. He says, "Dearest benevolent overlord." I was just curious, as this regular season has come to a close, how Fowler has played defensively in center. I remember when we traded for him that there was talk that his defensive metrics said he was a below average to bad defensive outfielder. And while I don't know if he is a candidate for gold gloves, I don't think he has played poorly. What do you think? No one seems to be jumping to replace him, so I can only assume his defense is at least offset by his bat. Well, defensively, Fowler's not good. I don't think that I can remember him, like, any instances of him really hurting this team defensively. And maybe I'm just kind of like looking past things or something, but I looked at the statistic defensive runs saved, and that's a stat that measures total defensive production from a player. And for outfielders, mainly it looks at range and arm. And yeah, Fowler's no gold glove winner, that's for sure. This season, his DRS was negative 12. But, you know, what's kind of funny is, Andy, you and I were talking yesterday about how we couldn't really point to any instances that we could remember where the defense has really killed this team. It seems like there maybe was a few games where Castro errors hurt them, but the defense really hasn't hurt this team very much.
No, here, listen to this. As far as defensive wins above replacement for Fowler, he's negative one. But offensive wins above replacement, he's 3.5. And his offensive runs above replacement is 36. So I think that, you know, any sort of liability he brings to the table as far as his defense is concerned is offset by what he brings to the table offensively.
Yeah, I don't think his batting average is where the Cubs probably expected it to be. He's hitting .248. But like you mentioned, Andy, he's provided a lot of pop, the 17 home runs. And as you said, that's his career high. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously as a leadoff hitter, you want that batting average to be a little bit higher. On base percentage at .346, you'd like to see that higher, of course. But he's a pro player. He gives you a pro at bat every time he's up. And yeah, he's been hitting the long ball more this season to kind of offset that low batting average a little bit.
Yeah, and he really, like, he kind of checked a lot of boxes too when they got him, because, you know, we need a leadoff guy and a center fielder and, you know, some guy who has got some good offense, and, like, he checked a lot of those boxes. So, yeah, he's not a perfect center fielder defensively, but he's serviceable.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, he's
tough Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's a tough defensive position to be compared to, because there's so many amazing defensive center fielders.
And I think he is, you know, he's one of the few players on this team. I believe he has some playoff experience. I'm not sure how much, but you know, you talk about the different boxes that he checks, and being a, you know, I guess you could call him a veteran. And with some playoff postseason experience and stuff, I mean, there's that part of it too. But, you know, Stewart asks about, you know, the Cubs really not having anyone to take his place. I think he kind of hints at that. And it doesn't really feel like the Cubs have anything in the system right now that could replace him. So, you know, I don't think Caesar is an everyday guy. Almora is not ready yet, and most likely won't be ready to start the 2016 season. So I would not object to bringing Fowler back for another year or finding someone else. You know, I'm kind of okay. I'm kind of like indifferent, I guess. Almora, if he was brought up next year, I think he would definitely be an improvement defensively, but he's not going to bring much offensive production, I don't think, especially early, you know, the first year or two.
Yeah, I mean, the question is would he take a really short contract?
Well, he took a 1 year this year, so.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, would he do it again? I don't know.
Right.
Why are you laughing? I'm really curious. I mean, I feel like he probably could get a multi-year deal from someone else. Don't
no,
you?
I know.
He
probably get
a 2 or 3 year deal.
Yeah.
So deal. Go ahead and laugh it up, Fuzzball. Star Wars reference.
All right. Next question. Well, okay. So on the last episode, we talked about the radio broadcast for playoff games. And while we were recording that episode a week ago, it was announced during that Sunday night Cubs broadcast that Lynn would be joining the radio booth. And we did not hear that discussion because we were recording, but we talked about that. Andy, you and I did on our midweek episode. And it looks like we got a few details wrong, which I think is probably the first time in the 352 episodes of the podcast that we got something wrong.
Unheard of.
I can't think of anything else we got wrong.
Unprecedented.
Right.
First error.
Right. So Nathan wrote in to clear this up. He said, on the last few podcasts, you talked a lot about the TV/radio coverage for the postseason. I just want to clear a few things up for you. Lynn Casper said on Twitter that he will only call play-by-play during the fifth inning of postseason games and that he will also do pregame and postgame interviews from the field. Also, during the ALCS last year, TBS used local TV announcers to do field reporting. So if the Cubs get that far, you can probably expect JD to be part of those broadcasts. Also, when the Cubs get to the World Series, ESPN Radio has semi-exclusive rights to the World Series, which means if you want to listen to the Cubs radio broadcast, you will have to listen to WBBM because all of the other affiliates on the Cubs radio network will be forced to use the ESPN radio broadcast or not air the games at all. I did not know that, which you can't really blame us for not knowing that because the Cubs have not been in the World Series in our lifetimes. So if you're within the WBBM signal radius, yeah, you'll be able to listen to that. But apparently all the other stations will not be playing Pat and Coombdog. So from what Nathan says here is that Lynn will just be doing the fifth inning. And I don't know if that's – I would kind of enjoy it if he was in the booth the whole game, but –
Of course you would.
I'm going to trust Nathan.
This is a dumb question because I haven't really used these apps that much. But like with an app like iHeart, people are giving me props for this is a dumb question. with the like iHeart Radio app, could you listen to WBBM that way?
I think they do black things out when it comes to sports.
Yeah.
So you'd hear some crappy local programming.
Yeah. You would hear like sometimes they do like. If you try to listen to a radio station from like their website, sometimes you'll get like kind of a different feed or whatever. And I bet it's something like that.
Okay.
So, no. Although I can kind of get WBBM where I am. Kurt, you're probably not able to pick it up.
Not even close.
Although, totally off.
WGM, I might have a shot, but
right.
No way.
This is totally off topic. Today I was in Central Illinois and I was able to find the Cubs. I wasn't able to pick up WBBM, but I did pick it up on another station. And Kurt, it was the station from Iowa City.
800?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, this next one here is from Jason in Korea. He says, I've watched Hendricks pitch all season. And it looks like he's just on the verge of figuring things out. I'm not saying he's Greg Maddux. He actually reminds me more of Jamie Moyer. But it was year three of Mad Dog's career that gave us the first real look at how good he would be. I predict great things for Kyle as a Cub and think we're seeing the Cubs postseason third starter coming into form right when we need him to. You all have been tough on Kyle most of the season, and rightfully so. But are you getting more comfortable with him as the third starter? I didn't realize we were tough on Hendricks.
Yeah, I didn't either. But one of the things that stood out to me about this message is that he says, I think we're seeing the Cubs postseason third starter coming into form right when we need him to. And that seems right to me is that it does seem like he is pitching his best now when we need him to do that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think what makes a good third starter is probably more consistency than, like, because let's not forget, like, he's had three pretty good starts, two really great starts, but then Before that, he had a pretty terrible start in the Pittsburgh series where he got knocked out after three innings. So, yeah, I think he's got the stuff to be a third starter, but, you know, I think he's got to put together a little more consistency, be able to go deeper into games and not just be a...
Well, does he have to go...
start, he's really good.
Does he have to go that deep into games, though, do you think, in the playoffs?
But don't you kind of feel like your third starter, like, to me, that's what a third starter is. It's like, he's not great, but he's going to go a little bit deeper into the games, eat up some innings.
You're saying in the regular season,
give
right?
Give you three. Go ahead.
You're saying in the regular season.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. I think you need him to go further in the regular season. In the playoffs, you may not need him to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I also, you know, after being hard on him, I do want to give him a ton of credit for the last two starts, like to go out there and do what he did. So yeah, it definitely gives you a little more confidence if he's to be put out there in a playoff series.
Right. Because even in his, you know, these last few games that he's pitched really well, six innings is kind of his sweet spot right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it's great to see him pitching well right now. Yeah, there's not a better time for him to be pitching well. And hopefully we can get a good, you know, I'm perfectly right now. I would rather have him pitch, be the third pitcher in the rotation over Hamill and or Heron. I mean, I think Hendricks. Yeah, I'm content with that. But for most of the season, it seems like he's been good for three or four runs every appearance. So you don't really want that in the playoffs. But hopefully we see the Hendricks of September, late September, early October. Let's see here. Jason has another one here. He says, listening to your podcast, the subject was brought up regarding fans needing to develop a rebuilding attitude, and I totally agree. Here are some numbers to help fans rethink the lovable losers. And he says he hates that name, the lovable losers, as simply winners. And I think this is kind of interesting. So he says that the Cubs are second all-time in total wins, 10,605 behind the Giants. They're fifth in all-time winning percentage at .511. He says, notice above .500. And for a franchise 139 years young, that's a reflection of sustained winning. 17 franchises have winning percentages under .500. There are eight teams who have never won the World Series. The Cubs are fifth all-time in National League pennants won, 16. That's the sixth most in all of baseball, more than Boston. And four teams in the MLB have never won a pennant. So he said it's all a matter of perspective. Go Cubs, wonderful winners.
I appreciate the optimism.
Yeah. Let's not forget. I mean, let's just look past the fact that a lot of those numbers were racked up 100 years ago.
Baseball.
But I think you're in the right. I think you're mentally and emotionally in the right place, Jason. I applaud you.
And we would like to see more fans in that headspace too.
Right. Yeah.
I'm totally on board with the just dropping the lovable losers.
Yes.
All that stuff.
Yep. So. Yep. Bob says, discuss tonight what or where was the turning point? Was it the Cole Hamill no hitter? That sounds insane, but after that, the team exploded.
I like his turning point. That's a Pat reference, right, Corey?
Yeah.
We heard it on the car on Saturday. In the car on Saturday.
That actually seems about right. I mean, I think after that Phillies series, everyone was like, what just happened? You know, like we got beat by the worst team in baseball. And then, boom, it just took off from there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just second his turning point as that no-hitter and that Phillies series.
I might argue that the whole season has been just kind of building momentum and that there hasn't really been a distinct turning point.
I think it's just because that series left us so low. I think it left us wondering like, okay, what's going to happen from here on out? Because it was a point in the season where you thought, you know, maybe these kids are just getting tired. Maybe what we saw, maybe we're now experiencing that slump, you know, that rookie year slump. I mean, it just with a team being based, you know, or comprised of so many young players, you just didn't really know what the rest of the season was going to look like. And that was, I think that no hitter and losing the next day, and so being swept by the Phillies, I think that was the low point of the season. And they just went on a tear after that, which, again, like I said, it's just so fun to watch a team not really impacted by losses. Like, it just doesn't seem to faze them. Or a series of, you know, losing a couple games in a row. It doesn't seem to really have that much of an impact on them.
Yeah, hopefully the... I don't know what to call it, but that sort of rookie naive mentality, and naive in the sort of like, hey, we've never done this before kind of thing, can right. keep going for a few more years, because eventually it wears off.
Yeah.
And you become a grizzled veteran.
right.
Like me.
And Bob also says, thanks again, guys, for a great season of podcasts. From you guys being in the booth with Casper and Gillespie to game 162 tonight, it's been a fun ride. And, yeah, thanks for that, Bob. And I was just, as I read that email, I thought, man, it has been a crazy season. Like, even just for us, say that, you know?
Like, oh, yeah, let's not forget, in spring training, you guys were pushing buttons for Len and Mick.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
What a season.
In a historic, epic Cubs season, you guys got to experience that.
And seeing Chris Bryant hit a homer in a B game, you know?
Right.
Been thinking, wow, yeah, he's going to be good someday.
Yeah, he could be pretty good.
Crazy. It's been like, it's just gone so fast. Yet that seems like it was so long ago. We've seen so much, you know, in the last 5 months. It's nuts. Okay, Nick says, very super important question for you guys tonight. How do I ask my toddler and very pregnant 8 months wife to leave me alone Wednesday to watch the Cubs game? My wife likes baseball and the Cubs, but she is no Don. So, Don, for anybody that is in the IVMV Patreon Facebook group, our private group for Patreon supporters, I think everybody finds Don very entertaining. She gets pretty tightly. If I'm sweating right now and kind of wound up over Wednesday's game, Don's got to be... She's got to be a basket case.
She's already bedridden.
She's bedridden. She's got a cold washcloth on her forehead. So he says tips. He wants to know, how can he ask his toddler and wife, 8 month pregnant wife, to leave him alone? And he says, feel free to address.
That's all I can say.
He says, feel free to address her directly on the podcast. Her name is Jennifer. Well, let me try that again. Her name is Jennifer. And he says, thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Well, let's see. Okay. Let me talk to Jennifer for a second.
All right. Talk to her.
All right, so Jennifer.
Look at me like I'm Jennifer.
Okay.
Yes, honey?
I don't think she would call me that.
Oh, man, I can feel him kicking. Can't wait till we have our next kid. What were you going to say, honey?
We're supposed to talk to Jennifer, not Nick. It's us talking to Jennifer.
This is,
I know. I'm just pretending I'm Jennifer.
Okay. What I would say to Jennifer is, you
can you get him a snack?
I'm sorry. Were we talking about something? Is this important?
Yeah. Okay. You're 8 months pregnant. You need your sleep. It's just going to get wild here in the next month or so. You're not going to get very much sleep. I'll tell you what, Wednesday night, you know, just go to bed early. Nick, I think what he'll do is make you a really nice dinner. Just put your cozy PJs on. It's starting to get chilly, and just go ahead and go to bed.
Oh, a real nice dinner so you can watch your Cubs while I'm slaving away upstairs taking care of the kid and future kid, feeling the weight of the future kid ponderously hanging off of my own body while you go watch your precious Cubs. I have to do everything around here.
It's almost like Andy's been pregnant before.
It's almost like Andy's heard this before.
He's only got one kid, so Cubs weren't even good then.
Oh my gosh!
Good luck, Nick.
Yeah, sorry, I tried.
I don't know what to tell you.
I tried.
Well, I would imagine bedtime for the toddler is maybe around 8. I mean, maybe you could try to get him to go to bed a little bit early, right? Perhaps.
Well, let him stay up, or her stay up and watch it.
Little Benadryl, sprinkle.
No,
little
no
Benadryl.
Bedtime. Time for bed early. No nap time that day. So
put
that
a little,
way she doesn't.
Put a little.
She has to take. No, go ahead. Go ahead. You always ahead. Interrupt me.
Yeah, go
always
ahead, Corey. The one guy on this podcast that doesn't have a toddler.
I was going to say put a shot of NyQuil in the chocolate milk. At
night. I wish I would have shut that down sooner.
All right, next question.
Okay. This next one comes from a listener that I like to call Mom, because she's my mom. She says, I'm wondering what the protocol regarding champagne is. Is it appropriate for the wild card win, or do we have to wait until we beat the Cardinals, or is it reserved only for the World Series? If we celebrate every level, do you recommend stepping up to better champagne at each level? As you know so well, I will be watching where carpet spills are frowned upon. My dad's a bit of a carpet dictator. Will I need to celebrate in the driveway? Does champagne stain? Any brand recommendations? Sorry for all the question, but this winning thing is new territory and I like to be prepared. Signed, Mom.
Oh, first of all, get yourself a good diving mask. Apparently.
You know, I think you need to, like, drape plastic all over the entire house in preparation. And then when Dad, we'll just call him Dad, comes down and he wonders about all the plastic, you just tell him, I got some really nice champagne and I'm about to spray it all over this house.
And he's a White Sox fan. I'm sure he'll be very understanding of champagne.
And then when
he tries living
to
drink room.
It, you just grab it out of his hands and spray some more.
Well, and you know, we know that the team is going to celebrate after the wild card win, mm-hmm. as they have all season long. So to do anything different wouldn't be in keeping with the tradition and spirit of the team.
Well, and you have to support the Binny's Beverage Depot sponsorship and keep the champagne flowing.
Right. I just had so you guys both know my parents. I just had a visual image of my mom popping champagne and then my dad standing there complaining about it, and then her like dumping on his head, like jumping around him, like, you know, like they're doing their celebration.
I would love to see it.
And then the dog licking it up. A little bubbly.
I'm not a champagne expert, but yeah, I think it's got to come
either.
From
I imagine
Binny's.
It stains in some
that
way.
Crap
it's pretty sugary.
Really, I don't think maybe. It would stain most surfaces if you just wipe it. I mean, it's almost clear. It's right?
I don't know.
Don't spill it on your white t-shirt and you're probably good.
Just put on your painting clothes.
Right. All right. So on the last episode, or maybe two episodes ago, I think it was, that we talked about kind of our favorite moments, Cubs moments in this 2015 season. And we have some voicemails from listeners that gave us their favorite moments. So stick around at the end of the episode. I'll include those voicemails in there. I did get one here from Robert, and he says, you guys talked a few podcasts ago about rebuilding the fans. That is something that happened to me this year. I was always the guy who had to make sure he had to do certain things in order for the Cubs to win. Example, wearing certain things on game days, making sure I watched the game in the lucky chair. The game that changed all of that was against the Rockies on July 27th. We had just given up a 7-4 lead against them. I remember I was so upset I slammed my laptop closed and walked out of the room. I gave up on them fully, ready to turn my back and wait for 2016. The bottom of the ninth, Chris Bryant hit a 2-run walk-off home run. That day was a truly special moment for me and the 2015 Cubs because I realized I can't ever give up on, because they always find a way to win. I realized how stupid it was to keep doing those little rituals to win because I stopped believing in curses and just expected this one statement by you guys at every IVNV, that's baseball. Or I'm sorry. I just expected this one statement by you guys at IVNV, that's baseball. I am a reborn Cubs fan thanks to you and this 2015 Cubs team. So that was a special moment. I mean, if a moment is able to like change your whole mindset, that's pretty, that's pretty impressive. That's a memorable moment.
Yeah, that's nice.
So, moving on. Thanks for all those questions. Again, if I've been getting a lot of emails lately and everything and questions submitted on Facebook and Twitter, the best way to get these to me because they're kind of coming in all over the place is to email them to me, Corey@IVMB.com. Then I can copy and paste them and I don't lose them because if you send them through Twitter and stuff, I see it and then I forget to do it. And so if you don't want me to miss it, that's the best way to do it. Kurt, do you have a scary stat for us?
I do, and this is an appropriate last regular season episode one. But the 2015 Cubs just won 97 games. There's your scary stat. Nothing surprising there, but holy crap, 97 games.
Yeah.
The ninth best in team history, and that's the same as the 08 record. That's better than the 03 record, but I think what they won 88 that year. So I sort of don't even believe that I just saw the Cubs won 97 games.
Yeah.
So it's pretty incredible.
Can I build on your scary stat of 97?
I had some others and I'm just going to leave it at that one, but go ahead.
Well, okay. So at the beginning of the season, we predicted what? I think we said between 83 and 85 wins. We were somewhere in there, right? And we saw them maybe sneaking into the second wild card spot. So if the Cubs would have, I'm fact checking this as I go because I jotted this down last night. If the Cubs would have won 85 games. Oh no, my app changed. Where'd the standings go? They changed the bottom part. Okay. Sorry. I'm looking. If the Cubs would have won 85 games, they would have still secured the second wild card spot.
85 would have won the second?
Yep. The Giants had 84 wins.
Gosh, they could have relaxed a little bit more.
And there's like a whole nother scary stat. The second wild card spot team won 97 games.
Yeah, yeah. And
the insanity of the number of wins in the NS Central.
Well, and they said that, you know, the thing going around on Twitter today was that this is the first time since divisions, which I believe started in 1969. Is that right? I think that's right. That this is the first time that the top three records in baseball came from the same division.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you start throwing out stats like that end in the history of baseball, you know, there's something kind of, my second one was something about Arrieta. I mean, we've talked about this before. He's been the scary stat so many times, but like you throw out an Arrieta stat and then you throw in the history of baseball on the end of it. And it's right. Just like, wow. To be talking about those kind of things right now is just, it's like I said before, it's so surreal.
In the first year, we expected him to do anything in the rebuild.
Crazy. So much fun.
Yeah.
It's been a blast. And,
man, yeah. 97 wins, the second wild card. That's just so crazy.
Do you guys have an internet muscle flex?
I do have one.
Oh, okay. I don't. Go ahead, Andy. I have one too, but you can go first.
Okay, mine comes from Cubs Instagram, and the Cubs were congratulating Joe Maddon, who set a franchise record with 97 wins in his first season managing the Cubs. So one commenter commented, "This is the most wins the Cubs have ever had." And then somebody else chimes in, "No, the most wins the Cubs ever had was 116. And then another guy chimed in and said, "No, it was 132. Look it up." then the original said, "It's 116. And then finally somebody says, "Both of you pay attention. No Cubs manager has 197 in their first year with the franchise." They were totally arguing about something that had nothing to do with what the original post was about.
Oh, man. Okay, I got one here. And this one was sent to a recent commenter, Mom. She sent this to me. And that is one thing. I love that my mom sends me screenshots of internet muscle flexes all the time. I love it. Okay, so I'm going to read two comments. Both are by the same person, but the good part is on the second comment. So as I read through this first one, just kind of, you know, relax for a few seconds. So this person says, "Are you always so vile in disagreeing? Can't just disagree without calling names, I see. That makes you one angry individual. I'm sure you're backing Donald Trump, too. Once again, pitch framing is a made-up stat. The umpire is watching the ball in home plate. Guys like you don't ever concede Ross's pathetic hitting ability, do you? No Chicago Cubs player has ever had a worse hitting year with over 150 plate appearances, ever. So when you just say just the facts, I don't think so. And I just point, and I just, let's see, I'm going to read it as it's written. And I just my points without a personal attack on you." Then the second comment says, "And I see you only have one like for your profile photo." Oh, man. I just laughed so hard I got lightheaded. Seriously thought I was going to pass out for a second. I find that to be so hysterical. You get into an argument with somebody and your like backup point is, "Oh yeah, and you only have one like for your profile picture." Right after saying, "And he made his points without personally attacking." Oh, man. Oh, that
brings me at the beginning of the season hating on David Ross.
Yeah, are you the person he's talking to here?
No, that was me. That was my exchange. Okay. I only have one like on my profile pic.
All right, that does it for this episode. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. A special thanks to our Hall of Fame level contributors: Jeremy, Dave, Dizzle, David, Jeremy, Chad, Todd, Dave, Adam, Elizabeth, Stephen, Dallas, Charles, Stephen, Stewart, Guy, Peter, Jeff, and Matthew, Jane, Shane, Michael, John, Craig, Rick, Luke, Artie, Kevin, Tori, Josh. Our associate producer level contributors are Matthew Macer, Anthony Hutfliss, Joshua Hansen, Ryan Shores, Brian Hunt, Andrew Gross, Tim Marr, Jason in New Mexico, Tristan Nichols, and the Quad City's own Jason Nunn. We'd like to thank those of you that jumped on the Patreon campaign in this last week. Lauren in Loveland, Ohio. She's a regular in our live broadcast. She's in there tonight. And also Steven in Chicago and John in Chicago. Patreon is how we pay the podcasting bills and we keep this podcast coming out. Pledging levels start at just $1 a month, and you can learn more at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. So this marks the end of the regular season episodes, and we've got a bunch of stuff coming this week. Monday night / Tuesday morning, we'll have an American League playoff preview episode for you. Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, we'll preview the wild card game, and Katie Day, who sings and plays this song that you're hearing right now, she will be joining us. Then Wednesday night after the wild card game, we'll be doing a post game show. So follow us on Blab, follow our Twitter, or go to ivmv.com/live right after the game, and we will be talking about what we saw. Hopefully, we'll be celebrating and looking ahead to an NLDS series with the St. Louis Cardinals. Also, download our free iOS and Android app. Just search IVMV in the Apple Store, the Apple App Store, or in the Google Play Store. We'll be sending out push notifications through the iOS app this week to keep you up to date with all of the live broadcasts and episodes. So the 2015 season is done, and it's now time to shift our focus to the wild card game. It's going to get crazy. You're probably all going to be nervous wrecks like I am. So let's try to hold it together. The next episode of this podcast, as I said, will be the American League preview, and that'll come out Monday night. Thank you for listening and downloading, and go Cubs!
Hi, this is Jeremiah from Dallas, Texas. Wanted to share my favorite moment of the year for the Cubs, and it had to be for me. My girlfriend surprised me with tickets to the game on April 18th. It's for my birthday, and we flew in from Dallas and got to see Chris Bryant's second game in the majors. Ended up being his first two base hits and his first run batted in. We got to see him live. So a lot of great moments otherwise, but for me, that has to be probably the biggest moment. I told you I remembered anything after the fact, after the game. I probably would be lying because we went to Wrigleyville and celebrated a little too hard, but it was a good birthday, and I can always look back and say I got to see Chris Bryant's first base hits and first RBI. So great show. Love it. And thanks.
Hey guys, my name is Tommy. I'm from Oklahoma. I'm a member of the Cubs fans in Oklahoma Facebook page, and I also run their Instagram page. Anyways, I was listening to your podcast, your most recent one, and you were talking about how some Cubs fans are kind of calling out the newer bandwagon fans. And one thing that kind of struck me on that is I've kind of had the same thought. Like, I welcome all new fans that we get, but I feel like it's really easy to be a Cubs fan right now, which is a good thing. But over the next few years, and especially with the future success with all these young players, and then potentially next year having an even better pitching rotation, we're going to be kind of getting that snowball effect with fans. I live in Oklahoma, so it's a lot of Cardinals fans down here, and I have to hear it pretty much constantly from everybody I work with, everybody that I'm friends with, they're all Cardinals fans. So I've even had Cardinals fans tell me, you know, that they, you know, wish us well. And it's kind of just a crazy idea to have a Cardinals fan, you know, that usually they just talk down to me, tell me about how, you know, good our team is. And I don't know. I go back and forth because they haven't, you know, all these new fans that are just coming on in the, you know, this year, the middle of this year, and then, you know, the ones that are projected out for the next few years, they haven't had to go through, you know, the pain that we've gone through, you know, over the past, you know, I've been a Cubs fan since birth because of my father, but, you know, growing up in the 90s, watching all these teams, you know, and just all these great players come and go, but never really putting it all together and having your heart broke, you know, over and over, having your favorite players, you know, like Sammy Sosa and Mark Grace and all these other people come and go and just never quite getting it all right. And I don't know. I guess where I'm going with it is I feel like we should, the people that have been around the block and have, you know, put in their time, we should have a little bit more rights to the team than these people that are going to be coming on, you know, as we start making, you know, our way to the playoffs every year. Not that they don't have any right to become a new fan. I'm all about it, but there is some bragging rights involved with being a lifelong Cubs fan, especially before they were winners. So that's just my two cents. I welcome all new Cubs fans. If you're from Oklahoma and you're listening to this, go to the Facebook page Cubs Fans in Oklahoma and check us out. All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, everyone. This is David from Chicago. I'm calling in with my favorite Cubs moment of this year. It's been a great year. It's hard to pick. But I'd say that my favorite moment is the final game of the four-game series against San Francisco at Wrigley. I got to be at that game, and Jake Arrieta, you know, as always, pitched an amazing game. He even got a triple, and he pitched 7 2/3 innings. And then the ninth inning, shutout innings. And then the ninth inning, Hector Rondon came in and loaded the bases and then proceeded to, I think he struck out the side. He got everyone out after that. And so we won 2-0, shutout, sweat the Giants, and we haven't looked back. So it's been a great year. A lot of fun times. And can't wait for the playoffs. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Dave from Burlington. Just calling in. I'm watching the Cubs game on Saturday night. I just had a question. Want to know what's their lineup for Wednesday? What's it look like? I'm not going to read all through mine and take up a bunch of time, but just curious what you guys think your lineup's going to be besides Arrieta pitching. So, anyway, see ya. Go Cubs.